If you eat, sleep, and breathe golf...
Sounds like my kind of guy.
...love to explore...
All right, here's what you do. You're going to call your PR guy on the phone, tell him I'm here to see him.
And most importantly, just want to have some fun...
Looks like we got ourselves an orgy here.
Welcome to Talking Golf Getaways with Mitch and Darren.
Don't you think this is starting to get just a little big for the two of us to handle?
Here's the guy with all the questions, Mitch Lawrence.
I don't know how much you know about journalism, but... First rule of thumb is don't ever ask a question that you don't want an answer to.
And the guy with all the answers, Darren Bunch.
Not his fault. He's just trying not to lose his job.
Hey, hey, hey. Welcome once again to Talking Golf Getaways. Glad you're with us as always. I'm Mitch. He's Darren. We will talk. And man, do we have a golf getaway for you. Thanks for finding us. However you dive into the world of podcasts, Apple, Audioboom, or, of course, the Golf Trip Experts website at golftripx.com. Where, by the way, we are hosting a very cool contest this week and something our guest today, who happens to be one of our favorite people on the planet, knows a little something about. Correct, Darren?
Oh, no doubt about it. We're talking with Dan Hixon again. He's been on the podcast before. And we're also going to talk a little bit about my new role with marketing the Course with No Name, as it is called currently, in Roseburg, Oregon, formerly known as Callahan Ridge. We are trying to find a new name via the @NameOurCourse social media accounts. If you want to follow along on those, we have a sweepstakes that's running for a few more days and ends midnight on March 1st. So if you happen to be listening to this before March 1st, make sure you check it out. A lifetime of free golf is what you could win with your name suggestion. And even if you don't win, just by following @NameOurCourse on Twitter or Instagram or both, get you into a drawing for a preview play foursome this summer to be able to check out the golf course before most of the general public.
So good. So good. All right, we're going to get to all of that in a minute, and especially to Dan, who's waiting patiently out there in Oregon. But first, some bookkeeping. You can find Darren @GolfGetaways on Twitter and Instagram. You can find me @MitchLawrence on those same socials. Hopefully by now, you know, you can find our esteemed producer, Chris McEwen, @ChrisMcEwen, strangely enough. And you can also, I hope, check out his great podcast, Golf Origin Stories, wherever you consume your podcasts. Consume away. Chris, hi. Hope you're doing well.
Everything I'm doing good? Very well. Yeah.
Everything good? The non-freeze is happening in Chicago.
The slow thaw is occurring.
Slow thaw.
That's right.
Just briefly, before we get to Dan, give us a little hit on Golf Origin Stories and a couple of the people you've had on lately. I know about them because I happen to listen. But tell our listeners.
Yeah, so I've been a bit heavy in the world of golf brands as of late. For those in the know, this is when everything comes out, all the new fancy, shiny gear. And so I've had some friends of some different companies come on. Jason Hyland of Sub 70 came on and he shared a great story about how a suit sort of inspired him to create his direct-to-consumer market or model for their company. Noel Zavaleta, who's the marketing and social media manager for Srixon and Cleveland Golf and Asics and I don't know, some other, she's got like four or five different companies that she handles. We had a lot of fun because she played as a teenager. She was very good. She had a full ride to college on a golf scholarship. And I found her rounds on the internet from when she was roughly 13 or 14 years old. And I interview about those rounds.
How cool.
Yeah, it's really fun. And then just this week, one of my very favorite golf companies, Asher Golf. I had the marketing manager on the show, Michael Verska III. And he tells a fun story about a recent product drop that they had that literally shut their site down. It was so popular. So it's fun. Yeah.
This is cool and relates directly to the course with no name, because obviously the sweepstakes is going to shut that site down.
That's right.
I have a feeling.
It feels like it's breaking my email, to be honest, right now. We've had some very good friends out in the golf business who have retweeted it. Jason Deegan from Golf Advisor wrote a story after interviewing Dan, and Golf Pass retweeted it to all their followers. Our friend Shane Bacon with Golf Central now, Golf Today, I guess it's called on the Golf Channel, retweeted it as well. And so the entries are coming in fast and furiously.
All right. So put your thinking caps on if you're listening. Get a name in there. Free golf for life. Come on.
I mean, no doubt.
Really free golf for life. And this isn't just going to be, you know, walking around the corner. The place you're going to get to play free golf for life is what we're going to be talking about with our guest, Dan Hixon. And Chris, before I go away, I want to reiterate Golf Origin Stories. It's fabulous. You'll learn a ton of stuff, have some fun, and you'll learn more about music with Chris than any PhD music class you could take in college. So go to it. All right, let's get to Dan Hixon. We've had Dan on before, as Darren said, episodes 141 and 153, both of them fantastic. If you want a chance, because we're not going to get as deep as we did in 141, which was the deepest dive into Dan Hixon's past that he's probably ever had before, but well worth it. One of the truly great, great guys in the game. And in addition to giving the golf world this amazing new course in Roseburg, and he describes it thusly. I love this. He said, it's scorecard short, reality long, and charming with lots of exciting stuff. And if that isn't a great description of someplace you want to play golf for life, I don't know what is. We know this. This is not just going to be a one-off, because Dan has done some of the great things in our game. Bandon Crossings, which my dear, dear friend Darren Bunch first introduced me to on a trip to Bandon. Bandon Crossings, fantastic. The reversible routing, crazy McVeigh's Gauntlet at Sylvie's Valley Ranch. And one of Darren's new favorites, Wine Valley in Walla Walla, Walla Walla, Walla Walla, Washington. I think it should be six Wallas, personally. But Darren raved about Wine Valley, and I'm excited because we've got a really cool Pacific Northwest trip coming up at the end of August, at which we'll play Wine Valley. But not only our Golf Trip X team, but you, the listener, as well. We're going to open it up to our golf traveling friends, so keep an eye out for that. God, do we have a lot of stuff going on. I just
realized. No doubt.
Isn't it amazing? Just reach out to Darren at Golf Getaways on Twitter, Instagram, if you're interested in joining us. Again, it's August. It's going to be beautiful up there in the Pacific Northwest. Things will be settled down a little bit. We can feel safer, and hopefully you can join us. All right, let's get to Dan Hixon, one of a kind. A true one-of-a-kinder. It's the only way I know to describe him. He's continuing his work on the course with no name in Oregon. We finally got him and hooked up with him after some really brutal weather up there in the Pacific Northwest. You can find Dan on Instagram at Hixon Golf Design, H-I-X-S-O-N Golf Design. We also hear there's rumors flying around social media that Dan will soon be on Twitter at Dan Hixon Golf, which is going to open up a whole new universe. Dan, we're thrilled to have you. Can't tell. We're thrilled to have you here on Talking Golf Getaways once again.
Well, that was quite an introduction. You had me chuckling in the background.
I usually like my laughs heard, but, you know, if you were chuckling, I'll go for that.
I had to mute.
Good. So first off, weather kind of breaking a little bit. It was so weird up there as we all watched what was going on, snow in Portland and Seattle and the whole area, but things getting back to relative normal?
Yeah, the cleanups under wrapped are being executed right now. And the city of Portland got up to 12 inches of snow on the north end near the Columbia River. And I live 10, 12 miles south of that. And we had a couple inches of ice, and certain areas got it much worse. There's people now that are 12 days with no power, no internet, wow, None of that stuff. We were out for 5 days, which is plenty in my book. We didn't really suffer too much. But yeah, it's the golf courses in the area went from no damage at all to significant. 2 to 3 weeks closed from tree damage, busted trees and a bunch of trees over. So it was kind of a surprise that it was as damaging as it was to our area. And so now the cleanup, and so lots of trees leaning against power poles and power lines and stuff along our roads. And, you know how many trees are in this part of the world. And so you can hear the chainsaws in the distance.
Mm-hmm. I just had an idea for the course with no name.
Okay.
Polar Vortex Country Club.
Well, Roseburg's 3 hours from here, and I don't believe they got below 40 degrees where we were in the, you know, we were sub freezing for, I don't know, two to three or four days, something like that.
Right. All right, scrap it. I won't have free golf for life.
I thought you were going to say Chainsaw National.
Chainsaw National is pretty good, though.
We'll put it on the list, Mitch.
Chainsaw National. And here's your playing partner, Jason. All right. Dan, last time you were on the pod, we were talking about a project at the time. It was called Callahan Ridge. Yes. And actually, it wasn't the last time you were on the pod. It was the first time. And the episode 141, we really dove deeply into Callahan Ridge, built in a sand and gravel mine. But it turns out the project went full ahead. The name Callahan Ridge never stuck. Was it a lack of a Callahan or a lack of a ridge?
Well, the story goes, that was a name given quite a few years ago. The former owner of the quarry, who is the grandfather of the project or the father of the project, who's no longer with us, used to have a winery called Callahan Ridge. There's also a massive ridge just to the west of the golf course called Callahan Ridge, and that's where the name came from. But it was never truly considered to be the only name, and the RV park and RV resort will be Callahan Ridge, and then a separate name for the golf course is what we're after.
Got it. We'll get to the RV park in a little while, because that's going to be certainly a feature of the course that people are going to want to hear about. This naming process, while we're on it, obviously every course goes through some kind of naming process, unless it's really obvious what it should be, and therefore easier. Dan and I know you're a fun kind of guy. Has it been fun just dreaming up golf course names when you're out working? Do they fly around? I know you've got a very creative brain.
Oh yeah, and I've had lots of my friends and people on the project or my friends outside of it, you know, playing with the idea, and you know, 78.5% of them are just goofy, you know, just fun, playful things, and so yeah, I like it a lot, and you know, hearing some of the ones that have been picked now, and just some of Darren's ideas, and you know, like I said, other people's is always fun and charming, and to try to, you know, visualize into the future. Okay, now what if this club is called, you know, Rusty Bucket or whatever it may be?
Right.
How would that all fall into place? And so the endeavor we're talking about of this contest is great, just if nothing else for, you know, see what people are thinking. I love ideas from wherever they come from.
Yeah, and I really do find it interesting, because this is something that we, the golfing world, never gets a chance to participate in.
Right.
I mean, ever. Whoever's building the course, the owner, maybe an architect has some ideas, but it's I've never heard it before where somebody from the outside world relative to the golf course may come up with a name that will literally, the first post I put up said, "Do you want to live forever?" Which I thought was great, because it will. You know, we look at courses that are 150, 200 years old, and somebody called it Royal Dornick.
Yeah.
So, all right. Darren, I know one of the things that I'm most, I'm only jealous of a couple things with you, Cypress Point. But I know you've been on the property a few times, so you know how cool it is.
Yeah, definitely. You know, Dan, I got up there and walked it with Dan before they ever started growing grass, when they were just moving dirt around. And, you know, it's an industrial property with mining operations surrounding it, but it's really tranquil too. There's no homes, South Aquapua River running along a few holes, including number one. You know, Dan, what made you look at this piece of ground and say, yeah, this is an interesting canvas on which I can create a golf course?
Well, you know, it started that the owners had kind of been playing with the idea for close to 10 years. And at one point they were going to just build like a 3-hole little family course where they could go out, you know, after work and just play a few holes and just have some fun. And that evolved. And soon it was 9, and then soon it was 18. And one of the friends of the project, who is also an Oregon State Beaver, played on the golf team, but he's quite a few years younger than I'd met briefly. And he was their local engineer and helping the mine with some of their engineering needs as well as the golf course. And so he helped them with the permitting and moving the project forward, and had actually done a really good routing plan, probably 60 to 70% of what we ended up using, it, basically for corridors, maybe not green locations and T locations, but sort of already in place. And, you know, I kind of know most of what's going on in Oregon related to golf. You know, it's a not a huge state for population and that much golf, and small enough to know a little bit about everything. Well, I hadn't heard anything about this project, zero. And one day coming back from the Willamette Valley and having worked on a couple projects that day, I hadn't checked my phone all day, and opened up an email while driving north on I-5 and saw, hey, so-and-so, you know, we met 3 years ago at the alumni tournament, and we have this project going in Roseburg that's fully approved. Would you like to design it? I pulled over to the rest area and read the thing about four times, and it was probably a 4-page email with a bunch of like a routing plan and some of this other stuff and explanation of what's taken place and what can happen. And so, you know, this was about 8 at night. And so I sent a quick email back and says, hey, I'll call you first thing in the morning. And so we talked for a while. His name's Alex Palm. And so just a day or two later, I was down there on site and kind of looking at his plan and meeting the owners and, you know, scratching my head how something like this could fly under the radar and that it could fall in my lap like that. So I guess, you know, the old saying of it is who you know. And but fairly soon we modified the routing plan to adjust with the RV park. And and so, gosh, it's just one of those, you know, people ask how you get projects, and that's how you get them. Sometimes they come over an email in the middle of the night. And so it's been great. And the owners are great people, the Guido family. And so it's been a lot of fun. I'm not even sure what your question was now that I rambled on. I think I covered some of it.
Yeah, you did. Darren asked you why that piece of property, and you pretty much told us.
Yeah.
Real quick, that was good.
I'll add to it. It was pretty rugged, not just because of the obvious of being a mine, but it had overgrown quite a bit. There was a lot of volunteer trees of willows, not trees, but bushes and blackberry bushes and cottonwoods that, you know, grew clear to the ground and just a lot of basically roads for moving material around. They would load the native material into big dump trucks and drive across. And so they had a lot of haul roads, and they often had big berms next to those to keep them safe, you know, so they don't go off into one of the ponds or another excavation hole. And so, you know, the first sight of it is it was pretty rugged. And, you know, the owners claim I didn't like it, but, you know, a project that falls in your lap, it's hard not to like.
You're going to find a way to do it, period.
Exactly. But, you know, I mean, it's, you know, once we started cleaning it up and, you know, taking those berms out and trimming trees up higher so you could see underneath them and through them and removing a lot of the volunteers and the weeds and stickers and, you know, jumping on a big tractor with a brush hog behind it was quite enlightening because, you know, you really don't know on the ground when there's 6 feet of or 10 feet of growth on top of it. You don't really know what the ground's like. And so that was quite fun mowing about, oh, not that much of it, but probably maybe a third of the golf course, just clearing it. And just it seems like the more we do it, the more we clean it up and build, just the prettier everything gets with the setting along the river. So we have a lot of good native area there, the views of the river, but the overall, it's Garden Valley is the bigger area. And, you know, so you're surrounded by foothills in basically all directions. And so it just makes for glorious sunrises and sunsets. And, you know, it's just a beautiful piece of property, which surprised me being what it was at first. But like Darren said, it's pretty secluded. There's no houses on it, never will be. There's a few across the river, but literally, you know, you're never within 100 yards of them. And so, yeah, it's just really a nice site, you know, formed by the floodplains through the years when the river would flood. So.
How long had the mine been closed?
No, it's still active.
So it's still going now.
Correct. Well, roughly it's a 500 acre site, and a lot of it is orchards. So they have cherry trees and hazelnut, and then they have a few pieces of land and some neighbors that they will do you know, cut their hay and bale their hay, and then they also have an active concrete batch plant. So the main business is they have. I don't know the exact number, but concrete trucks that deliver concrete all over the area, and it's very active. Those trucks are going out 2 and 3 times every single day. They also are always mining new material to make concrete, but also to sell various rock products, sand, and so, you know, they do a lot of commercial work as well as you know, residential people coming in with a pickup and getting a truckload of sand or pea gravel or whatever their needs are. And so that's still active, but because the site is so large and a lot of it, I don't want to say it's been mined out, but they basically just dig big holes in the ground to remove material. And some of that is fine sandy soil that they sell off right on down to, you know, basically Bar Run, which is large river rock, you know, coated in sand basically. And so once they get down to the water level, you know, the water level makes the pond. And so, so really a lot of this project has been reclamation around those pond edges that are, you know, they've kind of run their course for the mine. Now they still have plenty of room for future mining to gather product.
And it's far enough away. It's so big that it's far enough away from where the golf course will be.
Correct.
But it's not going to impinge on the Gulf.
No. You'll see, you know, some of the taller, the concrete batch plants probably 50 or 60 feet tall, maybe more. So you can see that from a lot of area. But the entry road will bypass, you know, because it's all on one property, but the entry road will bypass that and it'll be burned mm-hmm. off. So you might see a glimpse of a building here and there, but... and then the RV park will be on the opposite side of a berm from that whole operational facility. Right. And eventually, you know, with success of the RV and the golf course, they do have a plan in place to add to the RV and ultimately move the batch plant elsewhere because they have a couple other mines as well, quarries.
Right. All of it sounds so cool. Last time when we talked, we know Darren and I found out about how obsessive you can be about routings. We were talking about Sylvie's Valley in the last podcast. You told us you might go through ballpark number anywhere between 20 and 75 different routings for a course. That's a big ballpark, but you're a big ballpark guy. With all the mined out areas that became ponds on this property, just the way it was laid out, what were your biggest challenges in turning it into 18 holes? Or the 10 holes now and 18 holes next year?
Well, it's kind of ongoing because there's, you know, some of the holes we're going to build still could shift one way or the other because they will basically be manufactured. There's only a small portion of the ground that'll remain untouched on these upcoming holes. And in the original routing plan when I was hired for this job was a full 18, but it was... if anything, it was trying to be too long a golf course for what was out there. And so some of the safety and security of playing, you know, next to the RV park, for instance, or next to another hole was on the dangerous side, at least in my estimation. And so part of that was actually saying and convincing the owners that it's okay to build something shorter and not necessarily a par 72, but drop it down to a par 70. And so a lot of it was that, and we've had to fill, we have a lot of land, but a lot of it's underwater because of the excavations. And so we've had to refill a bunch of these ponds, and there's plenty of material around to do that, but it takes a while. And the sequencing and timing of using the equipment that is mining for money as opposed to mining or refilling for me, for the golf course, I should say. And so, but the challenges were many, many fixed points. Whereas like Sylvie's and Wine Valley both had, you know, massive amounts of land with really no restrictions at all. I mean, if a hole wanted to go north 500 yards, I could go north. I could go south, east, or west. Whereas here, it's like, okay, I got to really fit this puzzle together, mainly because of the ponds. But, you know, we have the golf course sits on a basically a horseshoe shape in the river. And so you can't go too close or too far that way. And these ponds and even the facility dictates quite a bit of it, along with the RV park, they thought they had it completely designed when I got onto the project, but I made suggestions and we sort of backed the thing up a year because we didn't really have enough room to fit both the RV. And so it was really an adjustment. It wasn't any loss of space either one, but it was an adjustment of some of the lot lines between the RV and the golf course. And so it's really interesting as the restrictions in their own way, they cause you to think more and be more creative. Because it's fixed now. How do you work around that? Whereas when you're on a big open landscape where you can go any direction, your thinking is like, I don't want to, you know, I just make sure I got to get the best holes out there. Whereas here it's like, oh no, it'd be great to go over there, but there's 35 acre lake over there. And so the restrictions, really dictate, at least in the way I work and design, they really dictate a lot of what ends up being built.
Boy, it sounds like it's such a unusual, and Darren knows this because he's been there, but it sounds like such an unusual piece of property. I mentioned before that you said the way you described the golf course itself, you just told us it was going to be a par 70.
Correct.
But the way you described the golf course before, you said it's scorecard short, reality long. The charming part I get and the exciting stuff I can kind of start to envision. The course itself is only going to be, what are you figuring, about 6,200 yards? Is that what I read? 63? Yeah. Somewhere in there?
Max out at 63, I think.
And so what do you mean by reality long?
Well, it has six par threes and four par fives. And just on the backside alone, which has four par threes, three of those are, you know, I don't have the exact numbers, but they're under 140 yards. And one of them's basically 110 or 115. And so just those three, let's just say we took those three holes or two of those three holes and stretched them out to a 375. Well, there's 220, 30, 40 yards each of those holes. So if you just had two of those, that's nearly 500 yards added to the scorecard. So you're 6,200 is suddenly a 6,700 yard if it's a par 72. And so by having these short holes, those are kind of the fun, charming ones, you know, wedges and nines and eight irons for most people. And you can kind of make a little more dynamic green on a short hole than you can, you know, a 225 yard par three. You need a lot of space for that. And so we also have one that's built and one coming up very, on the relatively short side of for a par four. One's at 300 yards from the back and another one will be not much longer than that, maybe up to 340. And so when you take, you know, five of your golf holes right there out of 18 that are that short, it's a little bit, I'm not comparing it to Marion, but that's how Marion is. It has a series of very short par fours. But when you play there, you play long par threes, long par fives, and some very long par fours, yet the overall scorecard, really until they modified it for the U.S. Open a couple of years back, was always considered too short for the modern game. And so I just think that somebody's going to see the scorecard and say 6,200 yards, and then they walk off the golf course and realize they hit a whole bunch of long shots into holes. And, you know, we have a 615-yard par five as well as about a 550. It's not been built yet. And then two, right down to about five, just, these are all back tee yardages, just under 500 for one of them. And so I think that's just the best way to describe it, is that the scorecard looks short, but you will still play plenty of long shots, even though you get, you know, you get to play these smaller little par threes and par fours.
Yep. No, that makes perfect sense. And I think that those dynamics are what make, you know, golf fun, you know, having those shots. And we're going to talk about the holes specifically, or the 10 that are being built. But that mix, I think, is something that so many golf courses built over the years don't have to really, you know, keep your attention, I guess, the entire round. You know, Dan, we like to think this podcast is about having a somewhat uncommon view of the game. Mm-hmm. And you certainly are willing to do some fun, quirky things in your designs. This project's no exception to that. Tell me about a couple things that golfers will encounter on the golf course. One of which is the bridge that you brought from far away to install. And then I definitely want people to hear about what I am now calling the slab that you left just off the fairway on one of the holes.
Oh, yeah. In the very first hole, there was approximately 10 years ago, the owners, one of their very close friends got married. And so they, smaller town like that, likes to have big marriages. You know, everybody comes, the whole community. And so it's not unusual for a wedding there to have, you know, 500 or 600 or 700 people, whereas, you know, in most big cities, it's kind of too expensive. And so not saying that there's not big weddings, but it's real common in smaller towns. And so they started clearing out, which is part of the first fairway. And I guess it's really just the first hole. They cleared an area and they put in probably a 40 by 40 or 50 by 50 fence in for the beer garden, so the kids couldn't go in there. And this is just mowed out in the pasture grasses. And then they had a band there, and so they needed a dance floor. And so they poured a slab about maybe 30 by 30. And it's kind of in the left side of the fairway. It's only the very longest hitters. It's probably 350 or 60 yards off from the back tee, and it's not really where you'd want to hit it. It's kind of up against some trees, and rather than taking it out, we just left it there and we just shaped right up to it. And so it's you know, there's a potential name for the golf course is the dance floor.
And you don't want to hit it over there, but that doesn't mean that people aren't going to. And I can't wait to see, you know, somebody take a high hop, kind of like when you land a ball in a cart path or something like that, off of there, and just the kind of the chaos that may ensue.
Yeah, somewhere I'd like to go into some weird haberdashery and find some goofy big hat or something, and the first person that unintentionally makes the ball land and stay on the dance floor, not land on it, but just stay on it, gets the hat.
Nice.
I think you should get a free drop in some dance lessons.
Or do it like Marion. I think I read somewhere or heard when I played there that if you stuck a ball in one of their baskets on the pin, mm-hmm. the local rule, because it's happened like twice in the 100 plus years of the club, that the ball flew into the basket, which there's no hole in it. It just broke through the wicker.
It was.
You get to drop the ball and place it 1 inch from the cup.
Nice.
So maybe we would do that on the dance floor on number one. You get your ball to stay on it. Because I think it might have a 1% slope. If we keep the edges mowed tight, I don't think balls will stay on it. But anyway,
joking. That's funny. Talk about the bridge too. I mean, I've shot some pictures. They're also on the at Neymar course.
Yeah.
I call it the course with no name so often that I mix up the two.
Yeah.
And I sing that song all the time. But I put some pictures up on the social media accounts. I also had put some up on my own account and on the Golf Trip X account when I was out there over the summer. I mean, this bridge is fantastic, and the story behind it is even more fantastic.
Yeah. So, well, the whole thing starts like so many good things, where it just starts as, okay, we need to find a solution. And the problem here was, how are we going to connect these two lakes? There was about a 50-foot wide berm that these haul trucks would haul between two lakes. One of the lakes is about 37 acres, and the smaller lake on the other side of the bridge is about a 3-acre lake. And at first we said, let's just bury, we'll dig through the berm, we'll put in about a 3-foot either concrete or plastic pipe below the water, the expected high water or the expected normal height of the water. And so that would equalize the height of those ponds. So effectively you'd have 40 acres. Well, that's what it started out, a 3 or 4 foot pipe. Then we thought, well, maybe we'll, you know, make a little bridge or put a bigger pipe and build a little concrete bridge over it. And pretty soon the owners went to the coast and through a friend, somebody says, well, we got this bridge. Why don't you come and take a look? And there was this big green steel bridge that was on a small highway or a country road over a river that had been torn apart. And they saved both sections. There was no connector. It was just one side or the other. And it's a big arch bridge, a truss bridge. And so they told me about it and said they could purchase it quite inexpensively. And so they took one of their semis over there and got it loaded up and strapped it on. It's an 86 foot long bridge. And, you know, most semis are 53 feet. So it hung over quite a bit, and they did it on a Sunday morning where there wouldn't be much traffic and hauled it onto the property. And they basically put it on, you know, they put each side erect and started welding them together with new I-beams and a connector across the top. And I just couldn't figure it. And, you know, it's still nearly a mile from where it would be located on the golf course. And of course we had to build some massive supports for it on each side of the pond. And so it was quite an engineering feat by, you know, for us to pull this whole thing off, but we were able to pour the bulkheads on each end and leave part of the berm so that we could reload the bridge on the back of a semi and drive it through the orchards and then through the fields. It'll be part of the golf course that we build this year. And they drive it up to the end of it. And they eventually put massive chains around it and use an excavator on each end and lifted it up and then drove the truck away, set it back down and then reconfigured. And they walked it into the position on the berm, leaned out or stretched out and dropped it over the bulkheads and then dug away the berm after that. And it was really an exciting day. I mean, you just don't, you know, unless you're a bridge builder, you don't do stuff like that. And so,
and when people see it, they, I mean, it's hard to even describe how big this thing is. And I can just imagine it, you know, going down the freeway or something like that. It's crazy. And it's beautiful too. Just a beautiful bridge. And in fact, I've had a couple of people already in the contest, suggest Steel Bridge Golf Club, Green Bridge Golf Club, you know, so, it's really, I think, one of those pieces that you're going to see, and it really kind of signals, as we'll talk about in the yardage guide, it kind of signals the final, you know, the final closing stretch of the 18 holes. Yeah. When we play all the 18 holes, it's kind of your gateway to the closing yep. stretch of the golf course.
Yeah. It's on the 14th hole. And so that's the 615 yard par five, and the longest tees, the back tees, are on one side of the bridge, and you shoot kind of parallel to the bridge. You know, the bridge would be to your left, and you parallel over, and it's a very long carry over a lake, although there is, you can hit it straight and you don't have to carry it that far. But then where most of the people will play, the forward tees are on the other side of the bridge, that opening. And if you play the course, you have to cross that bridge. And then of course we built the other bridge too, which is, similar. There was a narrow point in one of the other ponds. Actually it was called Miller Lake, and that was the gentleman that got married when they made the dance floor and the beer garden. And that one, we, you know, being a concrete facility, we could kind of do what we wanted. And originally we were going to make a concrete bridge with two culverts similar to the Augusta look of along Rays Creek there. And different span and different arch and all that, because it would be for equipment and carts and stuff. and we couldn't go around the lake just with a cart path from a safety and security standpoint. And so we ended up, I believe that bridge is about 65 feet long with two 10-foot culverts and a nice arch on it. We were going to have it either laminated with stone for that Augusta look, or some form of faux carved in, where they basically they put a different surface on it and then carve in the stones, you know. And it looked so good, just naked concrete with, again, that industrial look, very modern looking bridge. And so they're really nice. Both of them are very nice and they contrast each other, yet they both really fit our facility. So.
How cool. I can't wait to cross those bridges when I get to them.
Yeah.
let's talk briefly about the kind of resort component. You mentioned a few times the RV park and the Guido family. There's a lot of ideas that you won't find, I'm pretty sure, anyplace else. Not going to be your typical resort. Talk to us about the RV park that's planned and already in the works with a clubhouse. And I'm hearing that there's talk of tiny house accommodations, which I know Darren obviously is drawn to.
Yeah.
For those who want to stay and play, but they might not have their own recreational vehicle in tow.
Correct. So the RV park, really, you drive through basically right through the center of the RV park, which is well spaced. I mean, it's not a super tight, you know, every square inch taken. But you drive right through you drive up to the RV clubhouse. As you enter into the golf course, you kind of go right through the more or less the center of the RV park into the golf course parking. And the RV really is nearly connected to the golf course and the parking. The interface of all three of those facilities are, you know, between the RV, the parking lot, and the golf course are all very close to each other. And I think we've got them incorporated in. That's kind of a unique deal. And the RV park itself ultimately approved for 140 spaces. We're building approximately 80 this year. This beginning until it kind of gets established a bit more. But there will be roughly 10 or 15 along the river that would have a river view. And then there's about an equal amount of that on the golf course. And the RV park portion that goes along the 18th hole, rather than having RVs pull in there, that's where the tiny homes would go. So I'm not sure the exact number for 2021 that we'll put in there. It might be three or four, but I think ultimately there's room where we could do as many as I want to say around 15. And you described it just perfectly. If you want that to come and stay like as a resort, you have that without having your own RV. And I know a lot of people have RVs now, and you know they may want to travel with friends that don't have one. Well, there's a perfect opportunity where the RVs can park close and the friends can stay in the tiny homes and still kind of have that camping, glamping, whatever you want to call experience. So
that sounds so good. I keep all of this. I'm so picturing this whole project in my mind and what it's going to be when it's finished. It sounds fantastic. And I can tell by the excitement in your voice, you're an excitable guy anyway. But I can hear by just the way you talk about it and the vision that you have for it, which those of us, Darren's been there, I haven't, but you already in your mind, you're there all the time. You see what's possible and you can really envision what this place is going to be. I'm jazzed, man. Sounds absolutely unbelievable.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. I'm excited, and it's, you know, I've discovered through design of, you know, one of the things that's great, it's about just under a 3-hour drive from where I live to there. And I usually go, 3 to 5 days a week and run dozer and help build it and shape and so on and so forth. And that time driving there and usually on a Monday morning or whatever day of the week I go, and then driving home after a full day of work is such a great time to really design in my head. And come up with, okay, I'm working on this certain green and it's not quite right. Well, now I have this 3-hour drive that I can kind of, you know, I don't really have to do anything except, you know, get my car down the freeway. And it's a great time. I like being creative while I'm driving. And and thinking of solutions to all this. And
right. So. Sounds fantastic. And like I said, this is so who you are. You've talked to us before. And again, I can't, if you're listening to this and you haven't listened to the other two episodes we did with Dan, I really think you should, because it's such a window into the mind of somebody who's as creative as Dan is. Let's, before we move to the talking yardage guide, which is a treat too, but let's just move away from Roseburg for just a second. You're busy, obviously, not just with this project. What else are you working on, starting to work on? And do you think the high profile of something like Sylvie's Valley Ranch, and kind of the word of mouth and the way people talk about that experience kind of propelled you into this, I don't want to call it a golden age of your design career, because that implies you're, you know, much, much older than you are. But, you know, you came to the design career in such a roundabout way, and the whole story is so great. Do you think that that kind of has had a bit in leading you to what you're doing now?
Well, I think so, but not in the, you know, a direct sense of, you know, I haven't had a client come to me that says, you have to design my course because I played Sylvie's Valley Ranch.
Right.
But certainly the notoriety that and, you know, Wine Valley and even Bannon Crossings has all really helped. And I'm fortunate in the sense that, well, I'm fortunate in a million different ways, but I'm fortunate in the sense that I haven't really messed up anything. You know, I've had a few members of few courses that basically will say, you know, that's awful green and da 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 da. But, you know, in my heart, the green that they may be complaining about, I think, is an excellent green for their golf course. Might just, you know. And so I've been able to improve and get better in this field. You know, I've only been in it 20 years, which to me seems like I'm learning and still getting a much better all the time and improving and just enjoying the daylights out of it. I was going to cuss there, but I decided not to.
Oh, go ahead.
So, you know, it's made for great business where my phone just rings a lot and I have built up enough clients from long range planning and stuff at various clubs and courses in the area that my plate's kind of always full from that. But along with this Roseburg project that'll really take up most of this summer, along with another new project that I just won an RFP to remodel the Lake Oswego Muni golf course about 3 miles from where I live. Small little 18-hole course, 18-hole par three, and they're going to modify the land with adding a big recreation center with two swimming pools and trying to consolidate some of the park and recs department within the city of Lake Oswego. So that's really exciting. I mean, I could walk there or I could ride my bike or drive, but it's truly a home game, which is great. And so that's really exciting. We just got approval on that. Can't really say much about it. We're going to reduce the number of holes. We're not sure to how many or the exact routing at this point. It did take a lot of damage from this ice storm. So there's a lot of tree damage there now. They'll be closed for a week or two. But, you know, it's a great city that I live in here. And it's really exciting to be able to work and do that creativity this close to home. That's but along with that, I just jotted down earlier today, I have 7 other projects going besides Roseburg. you know, I'm going to do a small remodel in Central Oregon at a country club I work at there. And actually at Sylvie's, I'm going to do a putting course this spring once the weather breaks over there near the lodge.
There's going to be more golf to play at Sylvie's Valley Ranch?
Well, it'll be drinking golf.
Well, that's okay. You need to drink when you play McVay's Gauntlet too.
That's true.
Plus, well, there's a beer tree.
Yeah, the beer tree keeps you don't have to carry it up those hills. But well, this will be a putting course along at the lodge. For those that have been at the lodge, there's a Otter Lake is right out in front of it. We're on the opposite side of that. we're going to build a reversible putting course where you start at one end of the lake, you putt a series of holes to the other end of the lake, and then you turn around and putt right back. And wow. So it's within walking distance of a bartender.
Nice. I love that idea.
And it should be fun. So I just kind of sent them a plan for that recently, and just kind of waiting for better weather on that. I'm working on another full course that I can't announce, that we're not sure if it's going to happen, but we're basically going through the process. This would be an 18-hole course, and we're going through the process to see if it makes sense for land and cost and so on and so forth. Two long-range plans I'm working on right now for country clubs in the area that I've worked at, just about ready to submit the final draft for one of those. And I'm going to Seattle on Friday to check in another club up there that I've been had an ongoing long-range plan, and we're preparing to build a couple greens this summer, late summer again. So it'll be the fourth and fifth one at that course. So yeah.
So how does it feel to exist on 2 hours sleep a night?
It's well, normally this time of year, I like to sleep in a lot and be lazy and kind of recharge for the season. But, you know, I mean, it's been such a hectic year on so many levels for so many of us. And, you know, this from this ice storm to COVID to I lost my father in the fall. And and so it just seems like it's just going. And, you know, none of us expected COVID to rejuvenate golf the way that it has, but it truly has. And, you know, so many of my friends and peers in the golf business are, you know, they didn't get a winner. They were the only people that were rooting for this snow and ice so that they can, you know, get away for a little while. It's just,
right.
Golf is crazy right now. On the good side, you know, it's definitely rejuvenated. So,
well, it's great to hear. And I mean, obviously we've been big fans for a long time. And now that I'm working with you on this project, I just so looking forward to seeing how this all unfolds and how these other projects unfold, and just happy to see you just really, you know, continuing to make your mark on the Pacific Northwest. We were talking the other day that, you know, you are a rare case in this business, and that you kind of pretty much stick to where you are and specialize in that. And it's not that you couldn't have gone and done international projects and projects on the other side of the country, but why venture too far away if you don't have to? And there's plenty of golf to be built in the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah. Like I said, I'm very lucky. It's, you know, I kind of got in it. I started, you know, when everybody was still busy and there's no way they were going to hire me. So I just started my own business and grabbed to get my own work. And in a way, the best thing that happened to me business-wise, you know, it was the downturn in 07, 08. I had a project going. I had Sylvie's coming. And it allowed me the length and time that Sylvie's took allowed me to kind of absorb that real down period. And the whole time when I was building Sylvie's, you know, which was 7 months a year for like 7 years, my other business was thriving, you know, at the country clubs and the long range planning, mainly just because of the bad economy. So many of the kind of competition that I had just sort of went away through, you know, age, retirement, lack of business. And so, you know, I kind of lucked in there, where most people aren't lucky when the economy goes bad, but for me, it really helped. And so then it just kind of progressed as we go through the world now. So yeah, I'm very lucky. That's all I can say. I mean, I wanted to do this as a kid, and here I'm doing it full time all the time and enjoying the heck out of it.
Yeah, that is great. Mitch, you got anything else for Dan before we dive into the Talking Yardage Guide?
No, I think that's it. We covered a lot. Obviously, we're incredibly excited about this project and, you know, the projects for the next 25 years you've got lined up. But like Darren said, nobody deserves it more, Dan. Yeah, it's absolutely great to see somebody who's as passionate and invested and able to work in the community now. And it's great. It's all great. This is couldn't ask for anything more.
Well, thanks for the kind words. That means a lot to me. That's very nice.
Well, let's dive into the Talking Yardage Guide. We've done some of these Probably the most notable one was with David McClay Kidd about Gamble Sands. I thought it would be fun if we kind of closed out the podcast doing one for the Rogersburg project, but not all 18 holes. We'll do that when, you know, when we get to 2022 and those are all open. So for now, we just kind of want to walk through a little bit so people can kind of imagine and dream about what playing these 10 holes is going to be like. And I should point out that one of the things that I think we're going to push hard over the summer as people come and visit the project is we're going to encourage people to play 30 holes. So we're going to have hashtag play 30, because I think three times around the 10 holes will be a super fun golf pack day. And I can't imagine anything better, and I can't wait until I get to do it myself. Let's start with number one. You mentioned it. It is the hole that has the slab on it, but what's the length of the hole? And just kind of talk a little bit about what went into building it from right where you tee off with the river in view up through the green.
Well, technically it's not on the river, but you can see the first of the bridges on the right, which is on the ninth hole, which comes towards you. But from where you'll park your car, the first thing you'll see really is our putting green will butt up near the parking lot. And the 18th green is almost attached to the putting green. At one point it was, but now they're detached. And the first tee literally sits almost right on the putting green for the back portion of the tee. The first hole is a slight dogleg right, par four. It's about 410 or so from the back tees. It's kind of out in the open, but then you drive left side is a kind of a cottonwood forest, and the right is a bunker, and that pond is quite a bit out of play, but somebody will get there. And like I said, the dance floor is up on the left. The green kind of sits at a little bit higher elevation, and it has some real interesting contours around the green that I think are unique. I haven't seen it quite this way, but basically a low flow swale around the right side of the green that makes it very deceptive.
This is we should note that the real number one will be the real number one in the 10 hole routing. Yeah. And number two will be the real number two in the 10 hole routing.
Correct. So number two is another par four, about 390 from the back. The tees, it runs to the 90 degrees from where the first hole went. So when you approach the first green, if you're going straight onto the first green, the next hole, the tees are right behind the first green and the hole goes to the left. It's a little bit of an up and over tee shot through a gap in the trees, but it quite wide, probably 50 some yards wide. And once you cover the gap, go up and over, which is part of the old berm, you will see that the lake and the second bridge, the green bridge, it's like I said, it's a par four. There's no bunkers on it, just a pond on the left that should be out of play for everybody off the tee just from distance. And it's not real close or super tight to the green on the left. Certainly people will hit in it, but you don't have to challenge the lake so to hit the green. The green is one of the more undulating basically three different tiers, but not in a traditional sense of, you know, one, two, three, each getting higher. They're kind of, they're random.
Okay. Random is good.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things I like about the yardages that you've mentioned on both those holes from the back tees is that it means that these two opening par fours are going to be very playable for the people who play from the, you know, the middle, the resort tees, you know, guys like Mitch and I who are swinging the hickories, you know, you're going to have these golf holes that are in the, you know, 350 range. And I think it's, you know, to me that is just, that is great. And I'm anxious to see how we put the various tee boxes out there and tee markers and how each hole can be played from a lot of different, a lot of different yardages. Is going to be fun to watch that process.
Yeah, we've made the tees quite large. They're generally quite flat. They're not a lot of elevated tees. They're usually at grade, and they're usually tied in. Like the first green, all the surrounds of the first green will be short grass, and that short grass bleeds right into the second tee. And that second tee alone, well, the first tee is the same way, but quite wide. and it'll be, you know, we could, you could vary the tees greatly. And so it's not like, you know, only from 350 and you go back to 355 and go forward to 345. There's, you know, those tees can move back and forth quite a bit. So, big, flat, easy tees, easy for maintenance, easy to play from, and not tough to climb up or anything like that. And then once you get to the second is where we divert from the final course, where obviously you go from the second hole to the third, in case you were wondering. You'll go to 14. And that's the 615-yard par five with the green bridge. And this hole is a little bit like Pebble Beach, number 18, except the water's on the right from the tees all the way to the green. There's quite a bit of room. There's no condos or houses on the outside of the dogleg like Pebble Beach, but it's definitely a cape hole that you can, especially on a second or third shot, depending on how far you hit it, but it, the fairway curves around this lake, and
it is a big sweeping cape hole. Yes, I mean, the first time I saw it, I thought that, you know, before you ever grew grass. And when I was back there this summer, when the grass was starting to come in, it was just really, really amazing that it just, you know, it just, there's so much that you can cut off in so many different ways. Yeah. And then we should mention that it's the left side of that fairway that has the old rusty bucket, right?
Yeah, I mean, that hole really evolved. Interesting is, you know, it sits along this lake the whole way, but there's probably 15 or more feet of elevation change throughout the hole. And it had this massive pile of dirt and rubble kind of in the middle of the fairway when we started. And originally they said that the dirt there was really poor quality material, fill from somewhere. And we started cleaning it out, and I kept watching these dump trucks pull away with really nice dirt. And finally I said, let's not take this out of here. If that's all good dirt, let's leave it. And so we have basically the tee shot goes up and over this big mound, you know, it's probably, like I said, 10, 12, 15 feet high. But if you can carry it, and I think we've timed it or placed it right, if you play the appropriate tee and you can carry the top of this hill, you can have about a 50-yard kicker slope to run it out, kind of a speed slot. Mm-hmm. And the fairway's wide in the driving zone. It's 85 yards wide. But we also had some dirt farther up the fairway that, again, I didn't want to haul off and I didn't want to make containment mounds. So we pushed it from both sides with dozers and tried to form, originally we called them the Alps, but we ended up renaming them the Andes. And so there's these kind of high, they look like a mountain range. And we placed one of the old drag line buckets from the early days of mining there, where they would have a big crane basically throw this bucket out into the middle of the pond and it would sink, and the angles of the cables pulling it in would tilt it down and they would scrape a big thing of rocks. And so it's that's placed on the edge of the Andes about midway through the hole.
And eventually somebody's going to hit a golf ball in there, no doubt.
Oh yeah. We might get another big hat if you can land one in the bucket.
That's right. Okay. So from there, when you get to that green, you turn around, you play the 15th, which is a really nice par three, yeah, that will play as the fourth hole this summer.
Correct. It's 15 or four, and that'll be from the back, it's about 200. It plays about 160 from the main tees down to just over 100 and maybe 110 from the forward tees. It's uphill. It's a huge leftover pile of topsoil from the mining experience. It's probably the high point of the next tee is the high point of the golf course. And so you play into this big punch bowl green that is loosely related to a green that at Wine Valley in Walla Walla, that course that Kai Golby actually built that green. I'd kind of laid out where the hole went and everything and went into this draw, and Kai was our lead shaper, and he went in there and says, I'm going to build a punch bowl in there, and let him go at it for a day or so, and came back, and it's just a wonderful green that you know, balls feed in from three directions into the center of the green, and first impression, everybody thinks a punch bowl green is easy, but Kai made it both easy and real difficult at the same time. And so I was so I was such a big fan of that, of his work there on that course, that made me look good, that I just try to copy it at Callahan Ridge. But this one's a par three. That's a par five. And
that hole, by the way, that you're mentioning at Wine Valley, I believe I have a video up on my Instagram of me putting up and down the slopes of that green. It's I was out there by myself when I played this summer, and it was I spent probably 20, 25 minutes on that green, just hitting shots and videotaping things, because it is really super fun. And I can't wait to see how this one plays. And then when you go to the 16th, you've got another par three, correct?
Yep. You're up top. You're at the high point of the whole property. You can look out over, you know, a lot of the golf course. And it's originally it was just 105 yards from the tips. It's down off this hill to a real kind of long, skinny green, not super long, but very thin. The big mound, big hill on the right, again, one of the leftover topsoil piles. And eventually we ended up building another tee about 10 to 15 yards back, a little bit lower elevation, that so we can stretch it out a little bit. But it's really kind of the climax as far as the aesthetic of the golf course, because you're up high and you can see so much of the previous holes. And so it should be a really fun hole. It's definitely distance control all the way. You know, one of those holes that we hope it gives up a bunch of hole-in-ones.
Always a good thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love hearing that, obviously. All right, take us through the 17th and 18th. It's going to be the eventual closing stretch, with 18 being the seventh hole played in the early routing.
That'll actually be 17 and 18 will be 6 and 7.
6 and 7.
Okay. Yeah, so we're playing 1, 2, then we go 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, and then we eventually, and I'll describe these later, but we play 10, 11, and 9.
Okay.
That makes our 10 hole course. And, but the 17th hole, so in the final course, 17 and 18 will be the first par fours you play on that nine. There's 3 par 5s and 4 par 3s in the first 7 holes on the backside, which it's 5-3, 5-3, 5-3, 3-4, 4 for the par on the backside. So now you finally get to play par fours. 17 from the tips, I think, is about 425. It's again, you go back up off that same hill that you teed off on 16, and you play parallel to 14. It's a hole with a massive fairway, very wide, much like 14 in the 75 yard range of width. But the hole narrows down with a pond on the left and a green that's kind of hidden if you don't hit it far enough off the tee. But a very, very nice hole with a big, huge backstop that I think most shots that go long will come back onto the green. There's on the back and right side. So, but that green sits down by the lake. There's a bunker on the left between the lake and the green. But a very exciting hole. And then 18, tees very close there. And it just plays just slightly under 400 yards. The main tees in that 350 to 60 range. It's a dogleg left around a big flat. I call it our Chandler Egan bunker. That a lot like the bunkers at Pebble Beach that you see on, I believe on 9 and 10, both have these big flat bunkers with islands in them of grass.
Right.
So it's, you know, it's a probably a 5 or 6,000 square foot bunker. That the whole dogleg's around that. There's kind of a wetland to the right. Then the approach kind of goes up slightly, probably 8 or 10 feet to a semi, I don't know what you call it, but kind of like a Baritz green with a high spot, a low in the middle, and then another high spot. But it's very traditional in the sense it's more or less oval shaped. But the low spot that goes through it is part of one of our low drainage swales that we've incorporated in around the golf course that moves water away from the greens and around and off the approaches and creates lots of really interesting chipping areas that'll all be closely mowed. You know, again, rather than putting containment mounds, I like to use trenches quite a bit more instead of that. I think enough people have done nouns that they don't need my version of them. And so that takes you right back to the first tee. I mean, from the 18th green, the first tee is, you know, 30, 40, 50 feet away. So for this year, that will be your seventh hole. Then you go past the clubhouse. Now you go to the river, which is number 10, a par five. It's a long dogleg left with the river on the horseshoe of the river on your right is also the river is turning left as well. So it just basically follows the inside edge of the curve of the river. But there's also a pond on the left for the last, about 120 yards. And similar to a lot of the holes, real wide open driving area. Second shot, quite wide open, depending on how far you hit it. And then the hole kind of pinches down to the green, which again sits on a lake to the left. This hole has a lot of really great undulations in the fairways. Some natural, some that we copied the native stuff or the natural stuff. This is part of the old floodplain that hadn't been changed too much, as well as some of it had been changed quite a bit through the operations through the years. And so really interesting hole, definitely different than, you know, I've never really built holes on ponds. We had to, I mean, not that I haven't, but the ponds that we have at Wine Valley were, we had to basically one for irrigation and two for drainage that the county required us to build for capturing water as it comes down the hill, you know, about once every 30 years. But, you know, this one had these ponds in place. And so trying to incorporate greens that, you know, sit next to ponds and not gobble golf balls has kind of been pretty fun.
While we're talking about this course and the opening during the summer, just I'm always interested because it sounds like obviously a spectacularly visual place to play golf. You know that Darren and I love walking. How easy is it to walk the course in terms of elevation changes? And
yeah, I've kind of described it. The highest you go is probably, I mean, if you hit a ball into one of the ponds and you got down on the bank and put your little tippy toes in the edge of the water, the highest point above that that you would ever be on the golf course is probably maybe 20, 21 feet. And wow. So it's quite flat. You know, actually some of the lower ground is quite a ways away from the river. So most of it is really just gentle rolling terrain. Nothing. When I say uphill, I'm saying 8 or 10 feet above, maybe from the fairway on some approach shot. So it'll be very walkable. And, you know, I haven't thought it through lately, but most of the walks from, you know, from the first green to the second tee is, you know, 40, 50 feet. From 2 to 3 is, you know, depending on which tee you play, it's very close. And most of them are quite tight. So
right.
I think it'll be a joy to walk.
I thought about that looking at it when I was there late in the summer, that when it was starting to grow in, that walking around those holes, I was like, it'll be the perfect walk. It won't feel like a flat walk in any way, shape, or form, but it's not a walk that's going to beat you up.
Oh, gosh, no, not at all. I mean, 15, like I said, goes up maybe 12 or 15 feet from green or from tee to green, that par three. And, you know, there's, you know, in a 150 foot section, you go up most of it. And so, you know, it's you walk two flights of stairs, basically. I think it's really nice. And it is, again, like I said, it's very tight. There's, I can't think of one walk that's, you know, over maybe from 8 to 9 is going to be about 60 yards.
Yeah.
You know, so big deal. You get a walk through this beautiful forest along the edge of the river. So, you know, it's going to be a nice walk, not a long walk.
Yep. Well, in the 10 hole routing, the summer routing, we have two holes left, and one of them is the hole that I'm most excited to play. And hopefully we'll get to play it here in a couple of weeks. The par 3 11th, which has this kind of very cool, long, skinny, boomerangish green.
Yeah.
The entire complex tucked alongside a copse of myrtle woods and cottonwoods with the river just beyond it. But, I mean, it just looks like a super fun hole, especially when the pin is up front. it just feels like that you're going to have a lot of potential holes in one right there.
Yeah, you described it perfectly. The greens, I can't remember the exact length, but it's over 50 yards long. I think it's but probably under 55. It's very narrow in the 35 to 40 foot range through most of the green, and it does kind of curve to the right like a banana or a boomerang. There's a couple bunkers, which, you know, one in the very front left and one in the very back right. So, the two bunkers are 30-some yards apart because they're quite small. But again, that's part of the original land kind of formed by the floodplain, and we didn't really have to change it a whole lot. And the myrtle trees on the right, and they've been pruned up nice and high. So from that green, you can kind of look out over the river. Beautiful in the fall. The fall of 19, when we were in the early stage of construction, I spent a bunch of days in that area working on those tees and the 10th green, the 11th green, and some of the others in that area. And just watching fall come into the river and stuff, it was just spectacular. And that was one of the points where I thought, man, this really is a beautiful place now that we're kind of getting it in shape. And so, I think it's going to be a really fun hole. That front pin location is kind of a miniature bowl that left or right should kick left or right to correct itself. And we'd probably use that in some tournaments and stuff. And again, like I said, on that other par three, it's, you know, we hope there's 10 hole in ones a year there or 20 hole in ones a year. We don't care. So, but you put that pin all the way back and it may have switched from a gap wedge to an 8-iron to that back pin, and it gets kind of narrow and the trees get closer and that back right bunker protects part of it. And so, again, a little bit of the, how did you say that? Or did I say, I said it, the scorecard short, but,
right.
You said it. You said it.
Sporting hole.
Yeah. 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 It just looks like such a fun golf hole. I can't wait to shoot photos of it and play it. And then we close the round with essentially what in the 18 hole routing, what golfers will be closing the front nine with. So the ninth hole will be the 10th closing hole in the summer routing.
Correct. And it's from the back tees, it's a long hole. It's 450 some yards with over a pond, and you shoot right over the concrete bridge at an angle. And but another big wide fairway. There's kind of some swampy ground on the left that we've cleaned up, but it will be some form of a, what do they call it now? Not a hazard, but a penalty area.
That's right. That's how they name them now.
Yeah, instead of a water hazard. And but big wide fairway. The green kind of sits out in the open. It's a two or three tier green, depending on how you look at it, and a couple bunkers, and but lots of variety of ways. Very angular golf hole that certain pins you'd be much better off coming in from the left side, or vice versa, different pin from the right side, because there's one very small bunker. I mean, maybe 250 square feet. No, probably not even that. Probably 150 square feet. Right. Kind of dead center of the green, but it's set on a ridge that is not kind of normal and allows you to kind of take the high side on the right around the bunker or the low side on the left, depending on, again, what angle, where the pin is and which angle you're coming in from. So I think it'll be a really good test, to finish out that front nine.
Well, sounds fantastic, Dan, obviously. And the fact that it's 10 holes, everybody will start to get a look this summer, and then it'll progress to the full 18. I think it's going to be fascinating if you do get a chance to play it as the 10-hole routing and then come back when it's all done.
Yeah.
And kind of get a chance to play the holes in a different way. You know, that sounds like really fun to me.
Yeah, you get to play 7 holes on the backside and 3 holes on the front. So, you know, you get a little bit to see how they all get pieced together. And truthfully, the whole, you know, I really like the holes we've completed. I'm very happy with how it's come out. It's inspiring to look forward to these next 8 and trying to determine, do we turn up the volume and make it a little more exciting, or do we turn it down, or do we stay the same? And So it really inspired kind of the details of the design of the holes coming up. But just on paper and in my head, I think the holes coming up, the next eight, you know, three or four of those, I think are going to be probably the most spectacular holes on the course.
Well, you sent me a drawing of number 13 that you had in your head, and you said it was one of the holes you're most excited about building in the final eight.
Yeah, it's really just taking a piece of ground that's not there, and I've just been looking at it and trying to plan it. And I have probably more drawings than I've sent you of it, of various versions that it was going to be. And that was kind of the last thing I worked on this fall. I spent a day on the dozer there kind of cleaning up and working in the area. I was actually working on 12 green, but the whole time I could look over at the 13th green. It's another one of our smaller par threes. And so, yeah, I think it's going to be a really fun hole. Playing to the site of, you know, a gravel quarry. So it'll be a fun looking hole that kind of looks like it was just built right into the quarry. So
nice.
Oh, great. Well, we are definitely excited to see it all come to life. I know Darren is going to do everything he can to document the progress at Neymar Course on Instagram and Twitter. Let's not forget that. And thanks for coming back to Talking Golf Getaways. It's always a pleasure, Dan. It's always great to catch up with you. And I'm excited about all the stuff that's coming up.
Well, same to you guys. You guys are awesome. I enjoy the heck out of it. So it's really fun.
Cool. I look forward to seeing you. Remember, you can follow Dan on Instagram at Hixon Golf Design.
Yep. And don't forget, if you're listening to this before March 1st, the Neymar Course sweepstakes runs until midnight on March 1st. That's midnight Pacific time. And if you don't have to, you don't have a name, that's okay too. You don't have to have a name to have a chance to be a winner. We're also giving away the preview play foursome. And all you have to do to get into that drawing is follow at Neymar Course social media accounts on Instagram and Twitter. And we'll put you in the drawing and we're going to name one of those. And it's actually a 2-day thing. So it's like 60 holes that you could play over 2 days out on the 10 hole routing. And it's going to be super fun.
Sounds great. All of it sounds great. I love this. I wish I could just time travel ahead a few months and get to the West Coast from Myrtle Beach. So thanks again to Dan. Darren, always great to be with you, my friend. And I look forward to the day when we can get out there. And of course, Chris McEwen, Golf Origin Stories. Thanks to Chris for all the help and for the friendship. We're so glad he's part of the team, too. Hopefully we can all get out to the course with no name. All right. Every course that Dan Hixon has given and will give us began as a dream. We know that. We hope you have some dreams, too. Go run them down. So long. I'm running.